This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Iris Morales has been an activist and community organizer on the front line since she was in high school. As a teenager, she organized a tenant movement in East Harlem to support Puerto Rican families. And in the late 1960s, she was among the first women to join the Puerto Rican nationalist group, the Young Lords. But as time passed, she began to notice the stories of social movements don't always reflect the diverse experiences of the people involved. In her view, many of the stories of the 1960s were told through men's eyes and focused on just the glory period. So she decided that before it was too late, she wanted to contribute a more complicated narrative. Her new book is called Through the Eyes of Rebel Women, The Young Lords, 1969 to 1976, and it chronicles the rise and fall of the group and documents the particular contributions and involvement of women. She's going to talk about that book at the Sonia Haynes Stone Center for Black Culture and History at UNC Chapel Hill, and that is tonight at 7 o'clock. But first, she joins me in the studio. Iris Morales, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.
Tell us more about why you decided to write this book in particular.
Well, actually, this story has been a long time in coming. There's always been interest in the women members of the Young Lords. And for the 20th anniversary of the organization, I worked on doing a documentary to document the history and included strong segments about the participation of women. Fast forward 20 years later, the story has still not been told in detail, and I thought it would be a good time and a good way for me to invest my time at this stage of my life.
Well, maybe you should take us back a little bit and tell us more about the Young Lords and the movement at that time and what it all involved, that movement in particular, and then, again, women's roles.
Certainly, and that's a good place to begin, and actually that is where I begin in the book because I realized we're far away in time and people don't necessarily know that period of history and about the Young Lords in particular. We were a group of activists working in Puerto Rican communities in Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, and other urban centers. And we were concerned with the situation of poverty. We were concerned with racism. We were concerned with sexism. We were concerned with the situation in Puerto Rico, the colonial status of the island. And we were first generation born or raised in this country, so we had a strong connection to the island. And we saw our parents suffering in factories as migrant workers. And we ourselves in the school system were subjected to language and racial discrimination. And so all of that burst forth in the 60s, and many of us were looking for vehicles to change society, transform society, and bring justice to our communities. And that's how the Young Lords developed, and that's who the Young Lords were. We were great community organizers, and that's how I joined.
And tell us maybe a little bit about your personal history and how that the history of your migration fits into this whole story.
Well, I was born and raised in New York City to a Puerto Rican working class family. My father was an elevator operator. My mother was a garment worker. And we faced all of the injustices that that migration of Puerto Ricans faced in New York City. It was the largest Puerto Rican migration coming to the United States at that particular moment in time. And in high school, I got engaged with the world around me, and I discovered there was a war going on, the Vietnam War. I learned about the civil rights movement. I actually went to an all-girls high school. At that time, there was public education for single-sex students. And it was a great opportunity for me because I was a very shy person. But being among other girls allowed me to develop and learn and grow, and I became an activist, and I marched against the war in Vietnam, and I got engaged with organizations and learned about organizations like SNCC and the Black Panther Party and Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and all of those were influences on my life because at that time, we didn't have very much Puerto Rican history in the schools. We had, I found one book in the library, and I read and reread that book, stories by Jesus Colon, who had come to this country, was a generation older than myself. And so it was also a time of discovering who we were and to connect with what our history was, and as a Puerto Rican and also as a woman.
And you're talking about the end of the 1960s at this point, when the nationalist movements are beginning to emerge and pull together some of these elements that war, imperialism, racism, and our financial structure, capitalism themselves, are really the central structures that we're talking about and not the particular issues that seem to be more relevant a decade earlier.
Well, it's interesting because I was recently having a conversation with some young women about the book, and they commented that they were so surprised at this holistic approach. And I said to them, we were dealing with everything that was confronting us. Mm-hmm. We didn't think of things in terms of we're just going to deal with education. Our inspiration was organizations like the Civil Rights and the Black Panther, but also anti-colonial movements around the world, in Africa, Asia, Latin America. We were learning that people had the power to change society and everything that was wrong with society. So our work went from working with children, feeding them breakfast, to taking over a hospital so that it would provide quality care for patients. We took over a church to raise issues of hunger and poverty, but also what the responsibility of institutions are to surrounding communities.
Well, tell me now about the role of women, because you also write about obviously this holistic approach, and this was part of where the movements were going at that period, but also the tensions within the movement, particularly when it came to women.
Well, about women, we developed under the banner, and we did our work under the banner of the revolution within the revolution. And that phrase was taken from a speech actually given by Fidel Castro, where he credited the women in Cuba for the advancement of the nation. And this was a speech in 1965, so we're talking many years ago. But we adapted that revolution within the revolution to mean that we had to struggle within our communities, that the changes that we wanted to see in society for women could not happen unless the society as a whole changed. So we lived in a patriarchal, sexist society, and that those ideas were permeated the organization. And we had to, women in the early days of the Young Lords had no decision-making authority. Basically, we were relegated to the cooking and the administrative tasks, and submissive to being submissive and supporting partners, as I describe it in the book. And we got together in a women's caucus and we made certain demands. And we realized that in order to change the organization, just as in society, we would have to make structural changes. That meant we wanted women in leadership. We wanted childcare. We wanted the educational programs to incorporate feminist history, the history of Puerto Rican women, the history of women of color. We wanted the newspaper, the organization's newspaper, Palante, to have stories about women, but also to have women as writers about anything, that women could write about everything. And we won those demands. And that concept of a caucus, we later took it out into the community. We developed a women's union where we organized neighborhood women. And we raised very far-sighted ideas such as employer-provided childcare, equal pay for equal work, no sterilization of women.
Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think listeners will be surprised to hear the sterilization rate in Puerto Rico at the time.
Well, one of the issues, we were interested in all issues, and then there were issues that were very specific to us as women that we wanted to address. And we discovered a study within the caucus, as we got together, we discovered this study in Puerto Rico that women were being sterilized, that there were government programs to sterilize women. It became like a woman here might say, I'm taking birth control pill, la operación, the operation.
Very common.
But women was, just, yeah. was, yeah, it was in 1965, one-third of the Puerto Rican women of childbearing age had been sterilized. Puerto Rico had the dubious acclaim of being having the highest sterilization rate in the world. As we uncovered that, we began to campaign against it, advocate against it, radio shows, programs, protests, etc. We also discovered that this was happening in the United States. Puerto Rican women, African American women, Asian women, Native women, poor white women were being subjected to sterilization as routine. In New York, we found there was a very well-known doctor in the hospitals in New York who took on this struggle, Helen Trias. And she wrote that the hospital administrators admitted that this was a way to train residents.
And, of course, we know system-wide, statewide, North Carolina became one of the last states to drop its official sterilization program as late as the 1970s. Tell us now about the fate of the movement itself and, you think, the ultimate influence of women on the Young Lords.
Well, the Young Lords, the women in the Young Lords transformed the organization. And everything that I mentioned, all of these changes within and without, and brought great consciousness and to the Puerto Rican community about the rights of women. And remember, our women were very young. We're talking about teenagers, early 20s. And also we were, in the main, we were not college women. We were community women. We were clerks. We were welfare mothers. We were, and so that had a big impact, bringing the consciousness and awareness to the community and to the organization. Eventually, the social movements, I think you can't talk about the Young Lords without talking about the other social movements in the United States and what happened at that particular time. And you don't go up against systems of oppression and not expect that there will be a reaction. And there was great infiltration by the FBI, and there were red squads developed across the United States. I like to tell the story about the Young Lords, a recent story that happened in this regard, because we had one of the scholars in our community that was researching the Young Lords had requested information, police surveillance files for her research, was turned down, was told by the New York City police that there were no files. Long story short, last year they discovered over 500 boxes of police surveillance files in a warehouse. And obviously they're not all about the Young Lords, but they include the Young Lords, the Black Panthers, the Muslims, and who knows who else is included in there.
COINTELPRO, of course, some of this has emerged, but as you say, some of it, like those Soviet documents we talked about a minute
ago,
are still in the archives of the American version of the KGB at the time. Well, I want to ask you where you think we are at the moment, because of the infiltration, systematic efforts by the Nixon administration, not to mention Kent State and Jackson State, these efforts to systematically squash and violently kill these movements. Here we are today. You take a look at Donald Trump's approval rating, as low as it is, executive ineptitude in executing the immigration ban, et cetera, a mass exodus from the administration. Are we at a moment now where more people are beginning to understand this movement, this globalized, holistic approach to resistance, because more people are suffering now and perhaps take it to heart in a way that was only a black issue or a Puerto Rican issue before? Are we at that
certainly,
point?
Certainly, certainly we are. We're in a very important moment. I think we're in a good moment. You know, we're part of a continuum of history, and we build on what went before. What's happening now could not have happened without what went before. Mm-hmm. What we do today will influence what happens tomorrow. And I'm very hopeful because I see young people, but the whole society, you know, I participate in the Women's March in New York, but you see the range of people that are resisting. Because where there is resistance, there will be struggle. We didn't get here. We're not in caves and we're not slaves anymore, but we got here through persistent struggle. And I think there's a growing awareness about the decline of capitalism, the role of imperialism across the world, the United States' role, but other imperialist countries as well. And we're organizing. What I think is that we have to sink our roots deeply into our communities and expand the number of people and the people that we're talking to. And we have to be willing to transform. There's not a moment to continue to be in our little boxes, our one issues. We have to really be willing to transform. That means that we're going to have to deal with racism, our internalized racism. We're going to have to deal with sexism. We're going to have to deal, because none of us are going to be free with these isms. And I believe that firmly.
The personal transformation will precede this kind of global transformation. If we can't do it to ourselves, we can't expect anybody.
Well, I don't want to say it that way because I think it's a dialectical relationship. I don't think, you know, sometimes people say, well, we have to change ourselves in order to change society. I think we change ourselves in the course of changing society. And we face challenges along that route, but that's how we change.
Iris Morales, community organizer and activist who recently authored the book Through the Eyes of Rebel Women, The Young Lords, 1969 to 1976. Iris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We got links to her work, and in fact, she is going to be talking at the Sonia Haynes Stone Center for Black Culture and History at UNC Chapel Hill tonight. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org, and a link to the book as well. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.